Hello and welcome to the coaching call today. We have a very special guest here, Shirley Suleiman, who is a master at reducing stress. In fact, she has a company called New Stress Relief and also has a lot of private clients and has been teaching at Unplugged for years and years, as well as has a huge collection of meditations available on the Unplugged app. But what I love about Shirley is she has answers. Answers to how to deal with stress management, how to deal with depression. And what I love to do with these coaching calls is really kind of get tools and techniques that will help you for the rest of your life. So that's what we're going to do today. And if anyone can overcome these things, you know, the best person to ever overcome these things is someone who actually struggled with them in the first place and overcame them themselves. So I'm really excited to be introducing to you today, Shirley Suleiman. Hello, Shirley. Shirley, you're muted, so just want to make sure you unmute yourself.
Yes. Hi, Susie.
Hi. Well, we're so happy to have you on here.
Thank you. And thank you for having me.
I was in shock. I know a lot of people are joining us right now, but as I was reading these questions, I don't even know how we're going to get through all of them. They're a lot and they're great questions today. So okay. I'm really excited to hear your answers to these questions.
I'm excited to answer them. And I think as I start to answer questions, other questions will organically be answered as well.
I agree.
So don't worry if your questions aren't answered. They probably will be. And if not, you can ask us again.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people don't realize your incredible collection that's available on the Unplugged Meditation app of fun things too, like past life regression. Yes, there's a lot of stress relief, but we have just an incredible collection of all of her meditations. So we can talk about that a little bit later.
Absolutely. Sure.
If you have not listened to the story that's actually the Shirley Suleiman story on the Unplugged app, you could hear her story. But if you could just tell everyone quickly, you know, kind of the struggles that you started with and how you came to realize that we all have a choice and you can actually choose to live your life in a different way simply by making that choice. Do you mind just sharing your story?
No. And I will summarize it for everyone because I want a lot of times to answer your questions. So in summary, my childhood was one of full of challenges and struggle. And in short, I didn't see my mother from the age of 5 to 23. So for 18 years, I grew up without a mother. I didn't see my father because he would be in Indonesia and got us to be in Australia. Again, long story, but this is in short. I didn't speak the language, didn't look like anyone else. So it was a struggle on all levels. So the very foundation that I had known even as a 7-year-old, all were ripped beneath me. And in short, I experienced emotional, verbal, physical abuse. It was really challenging because of all of that. I started to develop a reactive depression when I was 9 years old. And reactive depression, in case you don't know, is different to clinical severe depression. Reactive depression is when someone develops a depression based on one or more traumatic experiences. Severe depression is when it's genetic. So I'm questioning this genetic thing sometimes, but that's a whole nother thing. It's different. It's severe. Reactive depression is the depression a lot of people actually experience based on one or more traumatic events, remember. So this continued for years, and this was my default position, being depressed, melancholy. At worst, it was even darker. At best, maybe moments of joy and laughter with friends, with loved ones, or the 10 days of the year my dad would visit. One day, when I was around 16, I can't really describe it in any other way but an awakening experience where I was just walking on the school grounds and I was being my usual melancholy self at that time. And I was about to go down this rabbit hole of depression. I don't remember whether something triggered it or not, but something different happened. And I'm going to try not to be esoteric and mystical, but just in that moment, if ever there was a message, a voice of God, a source, a voice of your higher self, whatever you want to call it, I heard it. And all it said was, you can do that, or you can choose differently. And I understood in that moment, every molecule in my being, what it meant. In that one moment, a lot of different things happened that I now understand. At that time, I did not understand. I just knew that my life was changed forever. And secondly, that one day I would come to understand it better and better and help many other people with it. And so that day is here, I feel. I've been doing this for more than 15 years, this being a clinical hypnotherapist, but teaching meditation for around 20 years. And the this, what happened in that moment, is what I try and emulate for others in different ways. And that one moment I learned there was choice, that I could choose how I respond to anything. Another significant part of that moment was it allowed me to be present, that part of this choice is to consciously be just present in this moment. What does that mean? That means I let go of my past and I can do this. I can release, I can forgive for my sakes, for my peace of mind. So that was huge. And remember, this is not all just conscious and intellectual. This was me feeling it and understanding it deeply. And thirdly, I felt that I took accountability, you know, that I realized, and this is going to be a topic as I skimmed and saw some of the questions of what I'm going to be talking about, that I am the cause of my stress, my anxiety, my depression, not life circumstances, but how I responded to them or reacted to them at that time. And so this is where we are.
And how did you come to realize that exactly? And like, what techniques did you use to respond to it, or tools did you use that have really helped you with that?
At that time, I cannot say that I was using consciously the tools, but because of that moment and because of me analyzing that moment, then I began to consciously use the tools. That moment happened in an instance. But you don't need to have an instant awakening moment. You can emulate it consciously, like the way we're doing it now. And it's really like what I explained, those things that happen in that one moment, the choosing consciously, the being present, the taking accountability for everything. And when I say this, it's not blaming. It's not that things are your fault. You know, when I say take accountability, it actually involves taking a responsibility in a way that is empowering. When you say, when we say, I am stressed because of X, Y, Z, or depressed because of so-and-so, what you're really saying is that so-and-so, X, Y, Z, has more power over me. You then have given your power away unwittingly. And that's what we often do, unfortunately. We give our power away every time we blame it on the life circumstances and on that person. Instead, the invitation is to realize this. The moment that you do this, and I know sometimes it's easier than other times, but you realize, wait a second, I think I'm angry, upset because of this person. But if I just take a moment, take a breath, how can I choose consciously here? Oh, I'm realizing that this is up to me. I'm going to take my power back. I am not stressed or angry or sad because of this person, but because of how I'm reacting to them. No, I'm not going to give my power away. I'm going to reclaim my power back. So now, how do I want to choose to respond to this situation? Right? And already you are open to many different ways in which you can respond to the same situation. And you can give me examples.
That's unbelievable. You know, a lot of the time people themselves make horrific mistakes in the past. Absolutely. And then the past will start, you know, regurgitating, so to speak. It'll come up. It'll pop up in a conversation with someone, bumped into someone who reminded them of something that you did way back when.
That's right.
And then you have this reaction, like, I'm not enough. I'm not good enough. I'm so upset. I did this when I was way back when, you know.
Yes.
How do you deal with not other external people who've created the situational depression, but when it's actually your past self, your actual past self?
Well, you just said a very important key word, Susie. You said your past self. And that's exactly what happens in that moment. In the moments when we are triggered, we are no longer in that present moment. We are in the past, and therefore we are aligned with our past self. So the awareness is the first step, where you acknowledge and you become aware of that. Oh, I'm speaking to this person I haven't seen for years. Often it's family members. And suddenly you're back at being that 9-year-old, that 12-year-old, right? So first, if you can become aware of it and realize, wait a second, all they said was hello. This is not rational. And suddenly I went down this rabbit hole, right? Then I am not in the present moment. I'm now with my past self. You can, based on that, say, okay, what does my present self want to do? Presence is so important. And this is, of course, one of the core practices of meditation, to be present. It's not just because it's a wonderful thing to say. And, you know, we all know the concept of being in the now, being present. It's about truly experiencing this and what it means to be present. That means that you are no longer going to allow your attachment of the past to be stronger than the reality of the present moment. That's really what it comes down to. In each moment, that's the choice that we're given. When you're triggered, we always get a moment to choose, wait, is my desire for peace stronger than my attachment to my past? Or stronger than my need to be right? Or stronger than my need to XYZ, right? And if you choose to be present, that is going to be the stronger choice. You are making a statement, my desire for peace or for happiness is stronger than my attachment to my past, my attachment to my anger, my sadness, my XYZ. And in that moment, you take your power back and you become aligned with your present self, not your past self, like what you just said, Susie, your present self, which is really the best version of yourself in this moment, I feel.
You mentioned it very briefly, but there's a thing that a lot of people who suffer from stress, anxiety, and oppression experience, and that is looping. It's the idea of you think of something that's upsetting you, and you go on this loop, and it spirals downwards. You think of the situation, what if the worst case scenario? What if the worst case scenario plus? And you can't get off that, or people feel sometimes that they cannot get off of the looping. Mm-hmm. How would you help them to move away from that?
Mm-hmm. I mean, the looping, again, is not a present moment thing, right? So the awareness and acknowledgement always is the first step to notice you're doing it. Why this is important is because we need to own everything in order to change it or let it go. So you can notice, oh, there's this looping thing that's going on. One of the traps that people fall into, whether it's looping, whether it's anxiety or any negative emotions, is they think that when they don't like something, the best thing to do or the reactive thing to do is to push it away. I don't like this. I want to push it away. I want to suppress it, avoid it, deny it. The unfortunate thing with that is every time we do that, we are actually making a statement to ourselves, to the universe, to the feelings. This feeling, this looping is more powerful than I am. There's no way I can do anything about this. So I just want to push it away. And what that involves is, you know, when you have an internal dialogue, you go, oh no, not this looping again. Gosh, why can't I, you know, that kind of dialogue, you are resisting it. In that resistance is a strong no, which declares that this looping or whatever it is more powerful than you are. And as you make that statement, that's what becomes true. The looping, the behavior, the feelings is empowered, and you have disempowered yourself. You've given the looping and anything else power. Does that make sense?
It does. And I've heard a lot from our clients talk about sleep. Mm. And how sometimes what will happen is this stress, the anxiety, the depression will literally, they'll fall asleep fine, but it'll wake them up in the middle of the night, and then they can't get back to sleep because mm-hmm. then Like, so what would be a good tool for them to use when
Right.
that happens?
So firstly, what I want to say about sleep, because I've helped a lot of people with sleep over the years, don't ever make it about sleep. They'll never think, oh, am I going to sleep well tonight or not? And in those moments when you wake up at that time in the morning, try not to have that thought of, oh no, am I going to go back to sleep or not? And then you just focus on sleep, sleep, sleep. And again, sleep is given power. You empower sleep, you disempower yourself. Instead, you're just going to, like in meditation, observe that, oh, I've woken up and it's only 1 a.m. Okay. Well, what I'm going to do now is just focus on peace, not on sleep, but on anything that brings you calmness and peace. What can you do based on who you are and what brings you calmness? That's what I would invite you to do. I know that the Unplugged Meditation app has a lot of apps on sleep and calmness. And, you know, I like that. I like listening to things and lulling me to sleep or reading things, but I don't recommend reading screen because that can stimulate your brain. I recommend more reading a book. Do it the good old fashioned way, you know, nothing like old school. So do that. And if you like music and you find that relaxing, listen to the relaxing music. And just imagine you're taking yourself on a meditation. Again, listen to one of the many apps in the Unplug app that just relaxes you. Doesn't even need to be an app on sleep, just an app on relaxation. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes this is enough to invite you, lull you back into sleep for many people. And that's all you want. That's all you want, just to be with calm.
When you meet someone and they're like, you got to help me, I'm freaking out in the moment, what technique do you use with them to help them in that moment when, you know, they're having this, not a panic attack, but they're having a surge of negative feelings, negative energy, negative, you know, or anxiety, depression, you know, but they want to get off. Do you have a specific breathing technique or a mantra that you use with your clients to help them in those moments to get off the wheel?
Firstly, if someone is freaking out, that means in that moment, they are not breathing well. That means they're holding on to a lot of tension. They are in fight or flight. And so I would get them off that. And again, not in resisting, just in being calm, like allowing for this calmness to be spread. And I would just let them be aware of what's going on, right? They don't need to push it away, because in that franticness, oftentimes it's this is making me panic. And this is another trap people fall into. They become anxious about being anxious. So that's something to watch out for. And that's another reason why you don't want to resist and say no to your feelings. Instead, I would invite them to just observe, as you would in meditation, observing your thoughts, observing your body, observing yourself. You would notice, oh, already, if you can go from I am anxious to I'm noticing feelings of anxiety, even I'm doing anxiety right now. Okay, not you, you're just feeling it in this moment. In this moment, you're feeling anxious and everything passes. And you are no longer the feelings, you are the observer that is noticing the feelings, right? Does that make sense? And then, because in that moment, if someone is panicked, that's what we do when we're panicked. Our breathing is tight, it's slower, it's shallow. I would invite them to notice their breath. Because the moment that you breathe deeply and slowly, you're already sending a message to your brain that we are safe. We are safe. And oftentimes I invite people to do this from inside out. However, when you're really panicked, I also invite the outside in, like do the physiological response, do the breathing, do the, oh, I'm noticing my heartbeat. Okay, as I breathe slower, now my heart can start beating slower. And again, all of this sends a message to our brain, literally, we are no longer in threat. We're not in fight or flight. We are now safe. Even the smile. I like getting students to smile in class at times at the last 5-10 minutes of the meditation, especially doing happy meditation, because you just feel it now, and everyone just feel it now. When you smile, this sends a message to our brain that all is well. If you really take it in and you allow yourself to feel this. And your breathing is deep and slow. So easy. Yes? Notice already a shift. Okay. And then from this space, we can talk about what they think is stressing them out.
It is so easy, and people don't realize that the breath is so portable.
Yes.
And magic sauce is keeping it deep and slow.
Yes.
Actually, your voice, Shirley, I haven't even spoken about that, but Shirley Suleiman, for those of you who have not listened to her on the Unplug app, she has the smoothest, most beautiful voice, and it brings you into the state of like deep relaxation. And that's probably because she's also a trained hypnotherapist, so she knows what works. So you have to listen to her meditations. So I have to say, I want to acknowledge that we have 103 people on this call live with us.
Beautiful.
And I want to appreciate all of you for actually being here and taking the time to learn about stress management, anxiety management, depression management. And we really do want to help you. And that's what this is all about. It's about the community of Unplug and really helping you in the moment and answering your questions. We received a lot of questions, which we're going to go through now.
Fantastic.
However, if before, you have any, please feel free to ask them in the chat.
Yes. And before we let this go, Susie, I just want to be thorough for everyone listening. Mm-hmm. I know that earlier you said that it was easy, right, with the breath. And I want to be thorough with this for people to go, oh, it's so easy, I'm failing. Let's say it's not necessarily that it's easy, but it's simple. Mm. It's simple. Simple doesn't necessarily mean easy, but it is simple. Why? Because we complicate it, just like meditation. It's really simple. Breathe in, breathe out. Right? Notice your thoughts. Breathe in, breathe out. Is it easy? No, it's not easy at all. But it is simple and it can be easy if we stop that reaction of, oh, I should be doing this way or that way, you know, the judgment and negative internal dialogues. Yeah. And I just think that's important because that's another trap that of self-help sometimes that people think they're doing it wrong or they become more frustrated that they quote the amount of times I've heard this in class, bad at meditation, you know, and there's no such thing. So I think that's important to clarify.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that is a pet peeve of mine, actually, because I think people don't realize that you're going to have thoughts. Your brain will never really be clear in meditation.
Right.
So when people think I have to be so zen, so clear my mind, it's just not going to happen. And once you understand that, and I appreciate you saying, Shirley, that it isn't easy, and you're right, it actually isn't easy. But once you learn it, it becomes simple and it does become a great tool that you can use in those moments.
Yes, and becomes easier.
Yes, correct.
And you'll have moments when it does feel easy, you know, and you watch the thoughts. And ironically, sometimes you may have a moment, boom, where it feels like there's no thought. You're in flow and it's wonderful. And then you think, oh, look, I'm in flow and wonderful. And you break that. The moment you become aware of not thinking, but that's not what you want to be attached to. And that's the point.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So we have a lot of questions. And Jelena, can you wave your hand? Everybody, please say hi to Jelena. Jelena's secret sauce from the Unplug app. We love her. And she organized your hundreds of questions into groups so that we could kind of simplify them. So I'm going to be asking, Shirley, you them. And if you could please try to, you know, keep it short and sweet so we can get to as many as possible.
Absolutely. And remember, sometimes I'll answer a question and it'll answer other questions. Yes, because I feel like we've already answered some of your questions in just us talking then, but I'm happy to go direct.
Great. I actually, this question I think is so perfect because it's something that we all question. Can you truly overcome anxiety after having lived the majority of your life with it? Let me just ask the rest of the questions you can add on hers, which is, what are the best practices for overcoming anxiety? How do you avoid triggers? How to manage triggers?
Okay, you may have to, you know, unfold the second and third part of that. So the first part of the question and the main part of the question is, yes, it's possible. Why do I know this? Because I do it all the time. The people that have been carrying anxiety for years. So I know that it's possible. I don't have the right to say, but I know you can do it. In other words, you would have to be involved. You would surrender to it, you know, as with anything. So what does that involve? That involves working on it. And some of the things that we've discussed, meditation, calmness, and if something continues to trigger you, like, I just can't get calm over this thing, then have the support and help that you need for whatever will help you with that. Therapy, hypnotherapy, and while I'm not an advocate of prescribed medication, I'm less of an advocate of emotional suffering. So for people with clinical severe depression or anything else that feels severe that you just can't seem to get on baseline and you think, you know, I don't know what these meditative people are talking about. I just can't get there. You know, then whatever you need to get there, get there. And, you know, you can wean off or we'll talk about that. That's a whole nother thing. So the short answer to that is it possible? Yes, it is possible. Second follow-up is, what did you ask, Susie?
The second part of it was, what are the best practices?
Like, okay.
So best practice for overcoming anxiety.
Right. So kind of answered that, but I want to come back to something I mentioned earlier. What is particularly effective for anxiety is what I said earlier when I said, don't push it away. This is particularly poignant and important for anxiety because remember, you can start to become anxious about being anxious rather than, oh no, I'm anxious. It's here again. Just notice, oh, okay, first, I'm doing anxiety. The part of me that does anxiety, okay, it's here, right? I'm not going to push it away because now I'm going to say yes to it. This may feel counterintuitive in the beginning, but remember, the moment you say no to it, you make a statement that this anxiety is more powerful than I am, and I'm now going to try and avoid it, deny it, suppress it. Mm-hmm. Disempower yourself and you empower the anxiety. So now I'm inviting you to do the opposite. When you say yes to it, you know, it's the law of physics. It might get worse in the beginning, but it goes up like a crest of a wave and you keep saying yes and give it spaciousness and it has no way to go but down. It will pass because everything passes. Ironically, it's when we say no, so putting a dam in the water and it spikes up and it's the worst thing we can do for it. So that's a really significant technique. And again, this is one of those things that sounds so simple, but it doesn't mean it's easy. And I get that because we've been conditioned to react in a different way. Right? But there are a lot of people suffering anxiety as a result. So this invitation is to do it differently. So you're going to be there and say yes to the anxiety. Oh, I'm feeling anxious. Okay, let's see what happens. I'm going to give it some spaciousness. I'm going to breathe through it. I'm going to say yes to it. Oh, I remember that Unplug app I was recommended. Shirley said to smile. Okay, I'm going to see what happens. What happens if I smile? This is so silly. I'm smiling anyway. And already, I kid you not, and I invite you to keep practicing it, you're sending a message to the brain. When you smile, I am safe. I am safe. I am safe. And that's the opposite to anxiety, which is fight or flight. It's a threat. It's feelings of unsafety. So you counteract that. Yes. I wonder if I answered the third part of the question. What was the third part?
It was how to manage triggers. And I think you did answer that. And I have to say, you said three things. So three tools that I love. Slow down your breath. Acknowledge your anxiety. Use the mantra, I am safe.
Mm-hmm.
And smile. Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna hop topics so that I can at least ask one from every section. Mm-hmm. The next one is about panic attacks.
Mm.
How do you calm your mind during, okay, that's the same one that we just did.
We just did, because that is important for panic attacks. And the panic attack only gets to the panic attack because the person often becomes anxious about being anxious. Mm-hmm. And ironically, that's what happens. Oh, I'm anxious. And they just continue to want to push the anxiety away, and your system cannot deal with it. It goes all the way to panic attack, right? It's like system overload. So you want to do exactly that, how I answered that question. First, mm-hmm. say yes to the anxiety. And even if it feels hard, you just think, okay. And let's be clear. You're not saying yes. Oh, I love anxiety. Anxiety, stay forever. It's not that kind of yes. It's more a yes that is a surrender to the moment as it is. Right now, I notice feelings of anxiety. Okay, well, let's see how this feels to say yes to it, to give it spaciousness. Okay, yes, yes, yes. And you wait for the passing, right? Oh, okay, I see. And it may be so slight. From a level 8 anxiety, it just drops to level 7.5. Mm. But the point is, then you notice the drop, so you know what's possible. And you keep on that path from 7.5, it will start to drop again, especially if you remember the breathing. And then you remember, if you can, even the smile. Okay. And the mantra, I am safe. I am safe. Feel it. The more you resonate and connect with the feelings of safety, the more real it becomes. Remember, and we haven't spoken about this before, our brain doesn't know the difference between something we are physically experiencing to something we're only thinking we're experiencing. The same physiological response happens in our body. Now, this unfortunately is often a negative experience of people when they're thinking about anxious and stressful thoughts. But now that you know this, this can now be used for your benefit. This can be one of the most powerful tools, anything to do with the power of our mind. So use it in a way that benefits you, which is in saying mantras like, I am safe. Your body won't know the difference between this being a mantra that you're saying to this being an actual physical experience, which, by the way, is actually reality, because really, most or all of the times, we actually are safe. We're not stressed or anxious when we're not safe. So the I am safe is a truth. Now, I'll extend on that. Someone will say, well, yeah, but what happens when if there's a fire or well, I almost hit that car and... In that moment, your fight or flight will be triggered, but it will be triggered for the right reasons because you need to act quickly. So our anxiety and our stress, because we're talking about stress and anxiety, is actually needed at times. And this is another important point. It's not that all stress is bad stress. There is bad stress, which is distress, D-I-S-T-R-E-S-S. There is also good stress, which is eustress, spelled E-U-S-T-R-E-S-S, from the word euphoria. We feel this when we feel happy. It's a new adventure, or we're traveling, or it's a new beginning, so we're about to do public speaking or something where we really do need more energy. So our body works for us. It releases this. And even when it thinks something is a threat, that's when it translates in our brain, oh, this is bad stress. This is bad, right? So when we know this, you can utilize this to work for you and say that mantra or anything else that you align with in that moment. I am safe. I am safe. Oh, the brain just starts to disorient itself and thinks, oh, okay, we are safe. Oh, okay. And it lets go of everything that it goes into when there's a threat. So hopefully that can answer a few questions.
That definitely did.
Because that's relevant for many of these circumstances that you think is stressful or anxious and, you know.
Right. So this is there's a bunch of questions in the depression section. So I want to kind of merge them together a little bit. Mm-hmm. One of the things is someone specifically said, will I be free from depression? Which you said it is possible to be. She's not sure if they will be free, but if they do practices, they will make progress with that. What is the most effective tool for dealing with chronic low-level depression? It's a good question.
Yes. And again, with depression, I want to be very mindful of it. Like I said earlier, if it is the severe clinical depression, there are already physiological things happening in your body. And again, I am not an advocate of prescribed medication and drugs, but if, because I get asked this a lot, so I just want to be thorough with this. If that's what you feel you need because you can't do these practices, you can't even get onto baseline, okay, then do what you feel you need, right? Now, we're talking about reactive depression. But other than that, if you are in this space because of one or more traumatic events, you feel depressed and or because of, and you said chronic, something that you are not potentially listening to with the depression. So I just want to say this about depression. I don't think once you have depression, I don't necessarily think you're always going to be over it. You're not, it's like an alcoholic. I call it a repressant depressant or something. It's like, you know, it's always there. You know, it can be around. And what that is potentially a gift for you because it lets you know, or for me, it lets me know if I am not fully aligned in the best way I possibly can be, then I'll notice something is off, like a depression, a low mood, whatever it is. And I've learned over the years, especially since that time when I was 16, that, oh, okay, this is letting me know I'm misaligned right now. Okay. Is there something more that I can do to help this? Is there a message? Is there something that I'm missing? Can I live life more purposefully? Is there a meaning? You know, oftentimes the meaning thing becomes relevant. Oh, I need to feel more meaningful in my life or purposeful. Okay, how can I do this? So once you learn to listen to your depression, it starts to be something that works with you, not against you. I hope that answers. That's reactive depression. Well,
one more question would be, and after hearing that, is what tool would you use in the moment?
For the depression.
Yeah. Like they say that gratitude is a great tool because it moves your mind towards something.
It definitely is. My recommendation is the shift in the way that is accessible to you because I want to be very considerate and mindful about depression. I know what it can be like at the bottom of that well. Feels like, no, none of these things are working. And so what's important is go for the one that's accessible to you first. So in that moment of despair, depression, wherever level you're at, sometimes, sure, if you can reach for gratitude, fantastic. Access gratitude, and that will definitely be bridged to feeling better, happiness, joy. However, if you cannot access gratitude, don't let that depress you even more, right? Because someone can think, oh, I'm a failure and this and that. Instead, access, even if in that moment, all you can access is neutrality. I mean, doom and gloom. Okay, what is accessible to me right now that I can shift into? Shift my gear into, oh, okay, yeah, I can do neutrality. All right, that's accessible. That's it. Go for the neutrality. And once you're in neutrality, notice if there's something else that's accessible. Now that I'm in neutrality, can I go for anything else? I can go for hope. Oh, okay. I can be hopeful because I just moved from depression to neutrality. And I did that. All right, I'll move to hope. Let's see how hope feels. And then you go into hope. I'm hopeful that I can change. I'm hopeful because I know this will pass because everything does. Okay, I'm hopeful because I remember X, Y, Z. I'm hopeful because now I can feel better as I breathe deeper and slower. And then from hope, then maybe gratitude is accessible. And if it is indeed, then access it. I'm so grateful that I just shifted from depression to neutrality, to hope, to now gratitude. That's amazing. My mind truly is powerful. And therefore, I am truly powerful when I remember and realize it. Does that make sense?
Brilliant. I love that. Okay, we're going to go into the sleep category.
Okay, sleep category.
I'm popping around.
Yes.
Okay, sleep. I have anxiety from the time I get up until I fall asleep. Am I over scheduled? Wait, hold on. How do you control sleeping habit? I tend to wake up every 4 hours, better sleep while anxious. I wake up a lot when I'm anxious and get the night sweats. What can I do to help? So if you could try to merge that.
Night sweats are interesting because I know night sweats can be associated with perimenopausal and menopausal symptoms. So just off the bat, I help a lot of women in this phase. Just notice that, just your hormone levels, that's significant. Now, let's say that's out of the picture and it's about anxiety at nighttime, right? Because night sweats is a symptom, the symptom of anxiety. So if you can take care of it physically, yes. Now, mentally, same thing as I said earlier in terms of sleep and anxiety. Don't make it about sleep. Make it about you want to focus on what brings you calm and what brings you peace, what allows you to relax. Right. Night sweats may indicate, oh, okay, and I know I'm hot right now. Hot, take care of it temperature-wise, but also it could be a lot of energy, a lot of yang. Oh, okay, so I need to cool down. All right, what does that mean? I need to calm down. Okay, back to the, and maybe physically it can be helped. I can turn on the AC, have a little bit of fan. You're doing everything that helps you. You're just taking care of it internally and externally. And again, your focus is on calm and on relaxation. So whatever it is that brings you there, calming music, meditation, lots of sleep and calming meditation on the Unplug app, go and do that. Right? Reading a book, a calming book. Writing in your journal. Actually, that's something I want to recommend in all the sleep category. From around an hour before you retire to bed, if you can, I invite you, if you're having trouble with sleep, say this to my client, write it out. Just journal and write it out. Even if you're just writing to throw it out, you're just letting everything be released before you sleep. Because oftentimes the sleep is your mind chattering, right? And you're thinking about everything from today, from what you do tomorrow, from should have said it, all of that. So write all of that out. You're not writing to write a masterpiece. You're writing to release. And then when you've done that, then you just think about everything that brings you calm. Night sweats, think about the coolness. Oh, what? How can I be more cool? Is it opening a window, AC, fans, you know, things like that. And you're not thinking about not doing something. I want to not have insomnia. You are thinking always on what you want, the calm, the relaxation, the peace. And then enjoy your deep and sound sleep. Yeah.
There's so many questions about stress. But if I was going to merge it into a ball, it would be how to deal with the stress from in the moment when the chaos arises, because it can happen so quickly. How to understand like why my heart starts beating when it doesn't even seem like anything stressful is happening around me. Mm-hmm. I'm literally reading these questions and telling you them. How to diffuse my own reactivity and not make everything about me, and how to not let my trauma triggers dictate my reaction to present situations. So it's a lot of like how to deal when I notice it arising, and it's and it doesn't seem like anything's even happening. And how do I respond to it in the moment to diffuse myself, and how to stop myself before I'm about to scorch the village or take it out on everybody around me.
Okay. What is important with this is what I said earlier about good stress and bad stress, remember? And hopefully everyone remembers that there's the good stress, eustress, E-U-S-T-R-E-S-S, the bad stress, de-stress. D-I-S-T-R-E-S-S. What is significant about this, that whether we're experiencing good stress or bad stress, we are actually experiencing the same thing physiologically. We are experiencing the rapid heartbeat, sweaty palms, the blood pressure going up, and a change in our appetite, more or less. And all these things that we experience when we're stressed, good or bad, is the same. Why is this significant? Because the only difference happens in the brain, in our mind. When our brain translates something as a threat, that's when it becomes bad stress. When it translates something as exciting, that's when it becomes good stress. Now, if we know this, then we know that we actually have more control. I don't like to use control, but more power over this experience than we thought, right? Because as you go through these, oh no, I'm going through this experience, you've already translated in your brain this experience to be a threat. When you know that, you can consciously choose to translate it differently. You reframe the experience and you decide, okay, so I am feeling stressed or anxious, but I remember that I can reframe this as excitement or good stress. My body clearly thinks I need more energy for something, so it's releasing it. Thank you, body. And this can be an adventure, a new beginning, you know, whatever I want it to be. But, and you can say again, but I am safe. I'm safe. We are safe, you know, and this is exciting. Does that make sense?
Yes. What daily routines do you suggest to deal with stress and anxiety when feeling rushed all the time?
Feeling rushed all the time is like two streets here, because there is the physical three-dimensional experience of being rushed, like you are rushing all the time because you're using all the time. That then is indicative that there may be an issue with time management. Right? All the time is all the time. So I invite you to look at that on a three-dimensional level. The stress part of this is the internal reaction to that, your internal reaction to being in a hurry. Okay, so if you've taken care of the three-dimensional thing and do the time management in a way that is best and accessible for you, then notice, again, your interpretation of things. I'm in a hurry. I'm going to be late. I'm going to be, you know, that's often the dialogue that comes in. I know there's all this, right? So if you notice that, again, take back your power and realize, wait a second. Okay. All right. I've got this many minutes, and whether I'm stressing or not, it's actually not going to help me. In fact, it will be deterrent. It is not a help. So I'm going to get ready in a way that I can, and it's not a threat. I will get ready and this will happen. I'm going to do this. And then again, every time it wants to come up, you'll notice, no, 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 we're just getting ready. I'm just getting ready. I'm going to be here on time as best as possible. If I'm 2 minutes late, there's nothing my stress can do to prevent that. All right? I'm just going to do everything I need to do to be prepared, to get ready. Does that make sense?
How do you deal with the anxiety and stress of children?
The anxiety and stress of children, on one level, it's very much like any anxiety and stress. You know, remember, it's how we respond to it. Now, when it comes to children, there's a different component, because if you're a parent of your child, there is this responsibility as the parent of that child, right, to be a great example and so on and so forth. So there is this area for sure, for certain, that you want to be a great role model. But the common trap with parents is they think to be a good role model is to tell the kids to do the da, 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 da. And actually, the best thing you can do as a parent is to be it, to be the calm that you are wanting your child to emulate, to be the calm and the rationality that you want them to be at school, to be in their life, to grow up into being. No, but you can't just tell them. You want to be it. So in terms of dealing with the stress, there's the one part of, if it's a life moment, then remember, how you react to it is your cause of stress, not your child, but how you're reacting to your child. Secondly, remember, oh, okay, I gotta be it. I gotta be it. I can't just say, stop stressing out. It doesn't feel calming.
It doesn't work.
Stop doing that. That's right. No one is calmer by that. But thirdly, why some of these things may not be working is that you're triggered. And this happens a lot with parents. Their kids often trigger them. So these techniques don't work, wow, in a way that just really isn't reachable. Go and explore your triggers. And like I said earlier, go and seek the help you need, therapy, hypnotherapy, something where you really do the work on your triggers, because then you are no longer in that present moment with your child, right? You were elsewhere. You were in your childhood, most likely. and it irritates you and triggers you and annoys you that your child, firstly, is not listening to you, and secondly, maybe displaying traits that you have that you are not at peace with. You know, so there are so many layers and complexities that can be in that one moment.
There are a couple questions actually in our chat, which weren't on our list, that I want to address. One is with Nina and one is with Kira, and they kind of are combinational. Nina says, I'd like to hear Shirley's thoughts on having morbid thoughts at the depths of my depression. I often think about dying. While I don't have the intention to end my own life, I often contemplate the things that feel so dire that it would be just easier if I wasn't here anymore. I'd love a way to reframe when things feel this bleak. Actually, I think that deserves its own question, and then I'll ask the second one. But I like that question because, first of all, if ever you're in that situation, obviously there's suicide hotline and it is there 24/7 specifically for that reason. So I highly recommend having that number in your cell phone, not just for yourself, but if anybody ever calls you and needs help with that, please, please, please take that seriously. But I like the question of how do I actually reframe that in my own mind when she's not going to end her life, but she would like a tool to use to help her when she's in that state.
I like that because I think it's so important, you know, other than what Susie said, the suicide hotline. When we think about ending our lives in those moments, remember, most likely you're not really thinking about ending your life. You're thinking about ending the suffering. You're thinking of ending because you don't want to suffer anymore. Right? This is what happens with suicidal thoughts. What's really important, vital in these moments, firstly, is remember that everything passes. So important. You will not be feeling this in 24 hours. You'll not be feeling this in 1 hour or even 10 minutes if, again, you're not resisting it. So watch that trap of, oh my God, I'm feeling like this. Why am I having, you know, like with anxiety? Don't resist it. Instead, be the observer. Oh, already? That's a reframe. If you can be the observer, you are no longer the morbid thoughts. You are the one that holds space for some of these thoughts, but you also hold space for 80,000 thoughts in a day. That's one or few thoughts out of these 80,000 thoughts. And you, like in meditation, can observe them and let them pass without pushing them away. Rather, oh, you can be from this place of curiosity and intrigue and even a desire to learn about yourself. Got it. Morbid thoughts. Oh, okay. Well, that's a really morbid one. We haven't thought about one before, right? But even in having that attitude, you notice and feel how suddenly you are now no longer the thoughts. You are the one observing those thoughts, right? And you remember that everything passes. Another important thing is remember you're not alone. That's why that hotline is important. But even anyone else, a loved one, contact, this is when anything works for you, internet, phone, text. And remember, lots of people are going to go through these phases. You are not alone. This is not abnormal. There are going to be ebbs and flows in life. If only you allow the passing of it rather than judge it, you're going to be able to do that shift thing that I said earlier. Okay, what is available to me now? When I reframe it into the observer, I can be in neutrality, right? From here, let's see if anything is accessible. And sometimes it's not. And you can say, okay, right now I feel like crap. Nothing is available. It's really bad. I feel dark. Okay, well then, I'm just going to be in neutrality and I'm going to stay and watch these thoughts and they're going to pass and they will be disempowered because I'm taking back my power right now. Sometimes I like to use a mantra too that is more, not today. Yeah, not today, depression. Not today, darkness. Today, I'm going to observe you.
Right. Wow.
And then you can, yeah, shift it into a higher vibration.
Today. I love that. You need to put that on the Unplug app. What are you doing tomorrow? We're filming. We have a spot for you, Shirley. Not
today.
Not today. Tomorrow.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah. I think that was really good.
Good.
The other question I think was pretty similar it was similar in a different way, but this is more how to deal with anxiety around grief and loss. She's lost all of her mom's siblings, and her mom is 90, and she's an only child, and she's finding it really hard to stay present around this. I guess like that must be feel like when you're an only child to have so much responsibility too, that that could also probably cause anxiety.
I'm careful about using the word cause, because you can think that from being an only child. And I've spoken to some people, clients that are only childs that can feel that. And I've spoken to many clients that are not only child. They have lots of siblings that they do not get along with. They hate, their lives are miserable, and they are worse off than the only child. And that's why you think the cause of it is from being an only child. But remember, it's how we react to it. And it's having context and realizing, oh, okay, this doesn't have to mean this. But first, I want to say, in terms of death and grief, first, I'm sorry for your loss. It's a lot of loss. And with grief, it is the only area, actually, where I would invite you to feel all the feelings with no time requirements, because the loss is not going to be replaced by someone else or something else. It is instead going to be navigated in a way that works better for you with time, right? And now the important thing with this, to help with that, is to realize, I don't know what you're open to or what people are open to, but if you're open to after death, that it doesn't mean it is an ending of that relationship. Because a relationship doesn't end just because someone is not physically in our lives. And this is true for death. This is true for breakups, marriages, children, parents and kids. They know this very well, right? Rather, be in a space where you are open for a new relationship. This is now an invitation to having a new relationship with this person or people that you have lost, which is you remember them for who they are. You remember how they affect you. You remember and feel how they would want you to feel and live life right now. And this is now the new relationship, because now they are accessible to you all the time. I just went to memorial on the weekend, and it was the first memorial I always heard of this consciously, where it was a celebration of life. It wasn't a funeral, celebration of life. This is what was requested. And there was music, and the talks and speeches were on those kinds of fond memories. And the members of the family, of course, they were devastated, but they also allowed themselves to stay focused on the love and how lucky they are and the community they built together and how amazing this man was and how he lived life, and therefore his invitation for all of us to do the same. And that's a win-win and marvelous, you know. So that is an ideal way. And I realize at times it'll be easier than other times. And I want you to realize that that's okay. That's okay. You're allowed to feel that as you're grieving.
I went to a memorial, and I heard the most beautiful statement about that, which is, you know, while death is permanent, so is the impression that he left on my life.
Yes.
What a gorgeous.
Yes. And I remember that one of the things that was said during the speech was when someone that this guy that just passed away, I think it was his mother, left, he was so confused and devastated then. And he went into meditation and prayer, and he asked, he said, I don't understand. I don't understand, Mom. Why now? Why now? Everything was going so well and this, and I was just starting on this new project and work. And he got an answer from her, and she said, because I can help you so much better on this other side. Yes. And that is so true. Again, I don't know what you're open to, and it doesn't matter, you know, it just matters that you're open to a new relationship with it.
I didn't even realize that this was so powerful. I didn't even realize it's 12:59. So
I'm flying. How did that happen? Having fun.
This was.
I love this.
You shared so many incredible tips. I feel so grateful to be able to share you with the Unplugged community. I feel so grateful that they can actually meditate with you. And for those of you who haven't really gotten to experience Shirley, she is just the light of all lights. And you can also watch her whole story, which is beautiful, on the Unplug app under podcasts, where she shares her full story. And also, if you go under the teacher section and discover, you can see her entire playlist. And my mom has been like following different teachers and just doing their entire playlist. People use the Unplug app. Ways. I would love for anyone who's interested to invite you to come on and, you know, maybe show your face. We'd love to see you. If you feel comfortable
thank
with
you
that.
For your comments on the meeting chat, by the way. I'm not opening them, reading them fast.
Shirley is an incredible miracle.
Oh, thank you, Judy.
Yeah. Thank you, Paul. Thank you,
Candace. Thank you. I'm so happy to hear that. Oh, good. I'm glad. Thank you.
So glad.
My pleasure. Yay. Look, we can see everyone.
Yes, we love seeing you.
See all of you.